Support for this KQED podcast comes from Stanford Blood Center. Stanford Blood Center is a proud supporter of KQED and encourages you to support local patients by donating blood. Learn more at bloodcenter.stanford.edu.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And Barracuda Networks, innovators of network security and data protection solutions designed to thwart cyber threats and data loss for businesses of all sizes. Learn more at barracuda.com/KQED.
On this July 4th weekend edition of the California Report, we're hitting the road in search of holiday traditions and events, and we'll meet some folks whose obsession is restoring vintage camper trailers.
I like to say that I'm a collector, but my wife would tell you that I'm a hoarder. Addiction slash hobby, it is a strange group.
Vintage trailers, there's much more to them than just the iconic Airstream, you know. Also, the Burger Boogaloo. Think garage rock, not hamburger patties. And what's July 4th without a trip to the county fair with competitions like a baby race?
Okay, in 3, 2, 1, crawlers, crawl!
I'm Scott Schaefer, and this is the California Reports.
If you ever plan to motor west,
Nothing says road trip like summer holidays, right? And more than 3.5 million Californians are expected to hit the road this July 4th weekend. And so we begin today with a bit of a trip back in time, back to when pulling a sleek, state-of-the-art camper trailer behind your car was a sign you'd made it into the middle class.
Every man dreams of high adventure in faraway places, of strange lands with curious customs. The open road is to him what the open range is to the wild Mustang.
That is a promotional video from Airstream. That's the company that made those classic shiny metal trailers.
With an Airstream at your command, you can head for anywhere in the world. To fish, to swim, to play.
And today, they're prized by collectors.
My name is Rachel Harp. I'm from Lincoln, California, and I've been working on and restoring trailers for 41 years.
My name is Paul Lassitanola. I published the Vintage Camper Trailers magazine, and we're here at Harp's RV.
They call themselves the king and queen of camper trailers. And we met up recently at the Vintage Camper Restoration Company Harp owns with her husband Joel up in Placer County. He spends his days sanding, cutting, and refurbishing parts for inside these fixer-uppers. And she keeps her eye out for their next project.
When I personally look for a trailer, unfortunately, I wish I could tell you I looked for something that was in really good shape and had needed no work. But to be honest with you, when I look at it, if it's cute, I probably get it.
We're standing on a lot surrounded by, what else, cute vintage camper trailers. Both Rachel Harp and Paul Lassitanola call it an addiction, this hobby they have of buying and restoring trailers.
Some of them I want because they're little. Some of them I want because they're rare. Some of them I want because they're big. But lately it's been because they had a toilet and a shower, you know. So
more practical.
More practical.
There's so many different kinds and shapes and sizes. There were brands popping up in the 50s and 60s when this was popular. And just brand after brand maybe only made a limited amount of trailers before they went out of business. But there were just so many different ones. And each one is unique and each one is interesting.
Lassitanola is a big fan of a canned ham style of camper with their curved metal roofs and pop-out back windows. But he says the best part of it all, it's the hunt.
You know, each year we try to have something new and different that we're show and telling, and you know, that's how we end up with 18 of them. So,
and that showing and telling thing, that happens at meetups, which attract dozens of vintage trailers and their fans.
A rally is like a circus. We have potluck, we have ice cream, we have root beer floats. I mean, it's the whole shebang. All those things that you wanted to do when you were a kid, we get to do now.
Barb takes me inside one of the metal campers, and the first thing you notice, it is really hot.
If you want to use these during the summer, you better be prepared to either be hot or prepared for air.
Air conditioning, that is. Nothing original about that, of course. It's a modern upgrade for sure. But everything else inside these campers seems original, or close to it.
The beautiful contemporary kitchen is complete with range, oven, and refrigerator freezer. No matter where you are, you will eat like a gourmet. You can bake biscuits high in the Canadian Rockies, or enjoy plenty of ice cubes in your drinks when you're traveling in the desert.
Also, single beds, drapes, and fixtures right out of an early Mad Men episode. Tiny bathrooms and showers. I mean, like broom closet tiny. So, who owns these vintage campers? Well, Rachel Harp's answer surprises me a bit.
I would say that this industry is more geared by women than any other industry I've ever seen. And there's like a dozen women's organizations out there that do this. But it doesn't surprise me because these are rolling little dollhouses and they want to fix them up and they want to go do their thing and have their happy hour and have fun.
This weekend, Harp and her husband will be kicking back, relaxing up in Lincoln. But Paul Lasitanola will be showcasing his wife's yellow and white 1959 Shasta camper trailer at the July 4th parade in the town of Galt, just south of Sacramento. Your holiday road trip might include visiting a national monument. There are some in California, including Muir Woods and Cabrillo National Monument in San Diego, all of them designated by the National Park Service. Two more environmental gems in California are up for monument status: Berryessa Snow Mountain up north, and one along the Santa Cruz coast in Davenport. And as Krista Almanzon from KAZU reports, not everyone is sold on that second one.
Along the Pacific Coast Highway, tucked into the hillside, sits the tiny hamlet of Davenport, home to about 700 residents. It has an inn, a wine tasting room, and a few restaurants. It's a tourist destination for visitors from nearby Santa Cruz and Silicon Valley, who are drawn to its secluded beach. Throughout Davenport's history, industries have driven its identity: the shuttered cement plant, logging, and even whaling. And then there are the rolling hills in an area known as Coast Dairies.
Let me get this gate unlocked.
That's where Steve Reed opens a heavy metal gate that blocks an access road to the property.
Where did it get that name, Coast Dairies?
Well, there was a dairy here around the turn of the century, and you can see some of the historic buildings just over that knoll. There was a cheese-making building or something like that.
Reed is campaign manager for the proposed Chitone Coast Dairies National Monument. The name, in part, pays tribute to the native people who once lived on this land. We head up the road in his SUV.
So what you see here is rolling grasslands and prairies leading up to foothills that lead into deep canyons and ravines leading to a redwood ridgetop.
The land spans just over 5,800 acres that surround the community of Davenport. Reed says it was once eyed by developers for housing, but eventually ended up in the hands of the Trust for Public Land, which protected it. We stop at a bend in the road to take in the view of the Monterey Bay.
The property has been designated by virtue of deed restrictions as a day use, publicly accessible piece of property.
Now owned by the Bureau of Land Management, this property is open to the public at least once a month for guided tours. The BLM is working on plans to create day-use recreational trails, but things are moving slowly, in part because of funding. That's where Reed says becoming a national monument will make a difference. The status would mean access to the National Conservation Lands Fund. Reed says now is the time.
These monuments generally only get designated towards the tail end of a presidential administration.
This land should not be directed by someone's political term.
That's Rachel Spencer. She's in the downtown Davenport living room of her friend Noel Garenbach. They're part of the Davenport North Coast Association. Their concerns about the potential monument come down to this: trash, trauma, and traffic.
All of the burden of this new monument is going to fall on the county. And the county doesn't have the money. We don't have any sheriff up here. We have no trash collection in the north part of the county. So all these resources are going to have to be paid for somehow.
The association feels a monument designation will only compound the problem. Noel Gerenbach points to the relatively new Fort Ord National Monument down the coast, which saw its visitor numbers jump from an estimated 250,000 a year to 400,000 after it earned monument status.
We can't say that we're going to go from zero to 400,000 here, but we do know that our visitors will increase significantly.
With all their concerns, they don't oppose the monument. They just want to see a comprehensive management plan first. It's breakfast service at the Davenport Roadhouse Restaurant and Inn, one of the few local businesses. Helmut Fritz bought the place 3 years ago after a career in the software industry.
It's not as a business owner, but as a person, I believe we live in a beautiful surrounding and people simply want to visit and we have to embrace that.
He says, of course, the monument would be good for business. And he's also ready to share the ocean and land that attracted him.
I've lived in many places around the world and I've realized there's no paradise, but this comes really close.
Monument backers are drumming up support in Washington, D.C. So far, Congressman Anna Eshoo has introduced a resolution to designate the land the Chitone Coast Dairies National Monument. For the California Report, I'm Krista Almanzon in Davenport.
July 4th, of course, is a time when many friends and relatives come together to watch fireworks, have a barbecue, that kind of thing. But members of the military are often deployed or stationed far away from their extended families. For the series California Foodways, Lisa Morehouse went to San Diego to meet and eat with military families.
Hello, my name is Scotty Wells, and I am a Navy wife.
Her husband is Petty Officer First Class Benjamin Wells.
He is a mineman in the Navy.
These minesweepers take small ships out on oceans.
They go in first to make sure that the big aircraft carriers won't set off any mines and explode. And some of the mines, oh my goodness, they're as big as a car. They're huge. It scares me to death.
So tonight, she's happy to be out to dinner with him.
And my five children. My kids are 11,
Wesley,
7,
Reagan,
6 and 6, twins,
Charlie,
Ryan,
and 4,
Parker.
That's Parker Princess to you.
That's us? Are you hungry?
They're at the Downtown San Diego USO, an organization that helps service members and their families. A few people sit at computers sending email. There's a pool table and couches next to a large screen TV, and a clean, bright room lined with folding tables, each with a collection of noisemakers. It's a kind of joyful chaos.
Thank you, Scullery!
We're having spaghetti and meatballs with zuppa Toscana soup, broccoli, salad, and French bread.
That's volunteer Sabrina Price.
So we made the spaghetti sauce from scratch. Whole bay leaves in there. We got fresh oregano and parsley.
This USO center hosts dinner every week, says director Tiana Kaler.
We do Tuesday night dinners because food speaks volumes. When you're at home, the first thing you do is you go into the fridge. You ask mom to make you a sandwich. It's our way of being a home away from home, and food is a love language.
Thank you. It's like having a family dinner.
Cameron Richardson's here with her three-month-old baby. Her husband's deployed on a carrier that hasn't reached his destination, so she doesn't know where he is.
He's an airman, so he leads in the planes when they come in on the ship.
They've been together 6 years, but since he joined the Navy almost 3 years ago...
We spend more time apart than we have together.
Here, she can meet people who get that.
And talk about stuff that you can't really talk to with even your own family because they don't really understand all the time.
I'll have spaghetti.
Yummies.
My name is Barbara Melendez. I am a hospital corpsman, United States Navy. We're the medics. We're the medics for the Marines and for the Navy.
She's with her daughters, Maida, 6, and Melinda, 5. They're USO regulars.
We love it here. Every once in a while, they do a pantry where we get like beans and rice and muffins, and that helps me out tremendously. It's just me and the girls, so it's tough sometimes in this economy.
And we'll just
send
a special thank you to NRD for catering.
You seem to lose your faith in humanity sometimes, but then there's places like this where people come together and prove to you, hey, we still care, we still notice. Are you okay, baby girl?
As the meal ends, Scotty Wells gets a rare moment to reflect on her future. These kids she's raising mean everything to her.
And on top of that, my dream is actually just to grow old and sit on a porch somewhere one day with my husband. I know that might sound stupid, but that's what I want. And I don't want to lose my husband.
She remembers a really difficult time when he was deployed for 4 months and she had newborn twins plus a 1- and 5-year-old at home.
I can't even tell you how many times I brought that stroller here. I did that frequently because, like, you make friends and they move.
A fact of life for many military families in military towns.
So then you have nobody here. Sometimes you just get lonely, so you come to dinner.
And she can every Tuesday night at the USO. For the California Report, I'm Lisa Morehouse in San Diego.
Music is on the agenda this weekend in Oakland, where thousands of indie music fans will gather for the annual Burger Boogaloo. But the Garage Rock Festival was started 400 miles away in a drab Orange County strip mall. That may seem like an unlikely headquarters for a fast-rising cultural tastemaker, but as the California Report's Los Angeles Bureau Chief Stephen Cuevas reports, it fits right into the vision of the ambitious founders of Burger Records.
When I stop by the Burger Records store in Fullerton, founders Lee Rickard and Sean Borman are just days from jetting off to France for Paris Fashion Week.
Yeah, we sell vinyl.
Guests of a well-known designer and Burger superfan.
You know, constantly doors are being opened and we're walking through them, just because people are into the bands that we're working with. So,
Rickard sinks into an old couch in Burger's cramped but cozy back office. Hanging from the foot of a makeshift bunk bed is a pricey tailored suit, a gift from that fashion designer. Even though everyday life is more Anaheim thrift store than Beverly Hills clothier.
We live here, so you're in my room right now. This is my bed right here. Lee lives in the front of the store here on the couch.
The floor, yeah. Or in the van.
So we're here all the time.
Virtually every waking moment, every penny earned, goes right back into growing the Burger empire, which now includes the record store and label, concert promotion, and merchandise. The Burger machine never sleeps.
Finished projects I've been working on.
Yeah.
Time is a hard thing to come by around here.
Hi, it's Burger Records.
That's why we've been able to do so many releases. That's why we still live at the shop. And we just
have time to dwell and think about what we're missing out on, because we're grateful that this is our life. You know, we're tastemakers or whatever, and we get to produce cool content.
We'll go to the fun spot. We'll leave when the fun stops. So how that sure is pop.
Rickard and Borman, now in their early 30s, launched Burger 8 years ago when they couldn't find a label to put out a single by their own band. They began doing the same for other Orange County bands, like Audacity.
Grow, you ain't no John Doe, make it for your own sake.
Audacity's Kyle Gibson says the band was pretty much the first to get a record out on Burger back when the band was still in high school. In the 8 years since, Burger's released around 900 records, CDs, and cassette tapes.
With them, it's all more handshake kind of stuff. They hate contracts and money and stuff, so... I mean, they don't hate money, but I've heard Sean say lots of times, like, that's when everything starts to get weird.
Burger's bread and butter is the one-off deal. Cheaply priced limited edition cassettes and 7-inch singles for scores of bands and labels. That includes heavy hitters like Weezer and Dave Grohl. Clients like it because Burger works fast, works cheap, and answers the phone.
Hi, it's Burger Records.
It's a one-stop distributor, manufacturer, and promoter for acts that fit into the Burger aesthetic, which leans towards messy but urgent lo-fi garage rock with a bubblegum heart.
Like to keep it raw and real and teenage and fun and colorful. And a lot of our stuff might not be perfectly manicured, but the sounds are, you know, top shelf.
And you don't even have to be affiliated with the label to be part of the burger world. This weekend's Burger Boogaloo is chock full of bands that simply reflect or inspired Burger's cheeky DIY swagger. None so more than Bay Area garage punk legends, The Mummies, playing a rare reunion show after disbanding nearly 25 years ago.
I'll be honest with you, we thought we were playing some kind of thing for an actual burger chain. There is a little bit of disappointment there, but, you know, we've entered into a contract, so we'll go through with it this time.
That's The Mummies singer and organist Trent Ruane, or so he says. It's hard to know who's who because of all the gauze. Since forming in the suburbs south of San Francisco in the late 1980s, The Mummies have swaddled themselves from head to toe in bandages. Think the Munsters meet the Beatles.
Yeah, I've always thought of it more as, you know, Night of the Living Dead meets the Monkees.
On the planet of the apes!
We were really looking for something that could be one of the dumbest things you could do.
In a sense, The Mummies were too punk for punk. Recordings were deliberately raw and sloppy. LPs and singles were pressed in small quantities. When they sold out, they stayed sold out. Then the band vanished, only to be unearthed by future generations.
We wanted to be The Mummies, and that was like our idol band in high school that we looked up to. And
we're just the attitude and the confidence and standing up tall and just, who cares, I got a snotty nose.
And like The Mummies, says Lee Rickard, Burger kind of began as a joke with a crudely drawn hamburger scrawled on a piece of paper.
We're not laughing to the bank yet, but we're finally looking at houses to rent because I really want a kitchen and start learning how to domesticate.
A kitchen does make sense because the burger is getting bigger. On top of a torrent of new releases and a new music shop in L.A., there's talk of opening a burger bar and grill with a stage, of course. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas in Fullerton.
And finally today on this July 4th show, for many folks, it just wouldn't be summer without a trip to the county fair. And what's a fair without competitions? You know, who can sew the best quilt, raise the finest looking cow, or preserve the sweetest strawberry jam? But this is the 21st century, after all, so who's going to leave the house to see a quilt? Yeah, county fairs are fighting for our attention. Some are searching the internet for the latest craft trends. Others are bringing back offbeat traditions, as Sam Harnett found out at the Alameda County Fair in Pleasanton.
Things are getting serious at the Family Fun Stage. It's hot, 96 degrees in the shade, and some competitors here are showing signs of stress, getting downright cranky as the announcer reads the rules of the race.
So the rules are, you cannot reach to the baby. The baby has to crawl to you. You can't push the baby on. You can't pull and grab the baby. The baby's in charge.
Yes, they are about to race babies. They put on a little circus music to get everyone in the mood. These traditional diaper derbies, or dashes, are making a comeback at California fairs. Babies under 12 months crawl along the rainbow-colored lanes of a mat, chasing glory and a cash prize for their parents.
I think it's like $100 for first place.
Ricky Romero is Giovanni's mom. He's decked out in an American flag onesie. She thinks he's got this in the bag.
But I'm just really doing it for fun, you know, see, watch him destroy all those other babies, you know, crawl as fast as he can.
The race begins in half an hour, which gives us plenty of time to tour the fair's other competitions. And they are legion. There's livestock, produce, high school artwork, soap carving.
We have pretty much everything you could imagine.
Exhibit coordinator Carrie Estabrook shows me all the crafts people have submitted for competition. She says the fair's trying to innovate, to keep kids engaged. She scours the internet for new hobbies.
We go based on what the trends are.
You know what's big? Duct tape.
This year I added the duct tape and the origami, and we did a shoebox float contest where you turned a shoebox into a float.
And some kid used tongue depressors to turn his shoebox into Noah's Ark.
These people are creative.
Next door, I check out all the collectibles, also judged. On display, we've got Elvis memorabilia, Norwegian wood carvings, rubber ducky collections, several of them, But my personal favorite is the display of all things R2-D2. Trash cans, Christmas lights, and different figurines.
Look, R2-D2 cowboy. Hey guys, look.
The fair includes over 16,000 contest items. So who judges all this stuff? Well, Clyde Cerda works on food.
I eat it, take a taste of it, and I spit it out.
He just finished tasting 20 different cupcakes, even one with a wine-flavored frosting.
You get palate fatigue if you eat it all and you start to get full, and this way you can continue going and going and going.
Okay, it is time. Time for the diaper derby to begin.
Do you have your baby, ma'am? Okay, we're waiting for one last baby.
The parents have split up into callers and droppers. The droppers hold the babies above the starting line, and the callers stand on the other side with toys and treats and bottles, all to entice their babies.
Okay, in 3, 2, 1, crawlers, crawl!
And the babies just sit there. Some start to cry. Others play or stare in confusion at the cheering crowd.
Let's see if they can make it.
A grandpa breaks the rules and begins gently whacking one baby on the bottom. It's utter chaos. But out of that chaos comes baby Romero. He's wailing and speeding toward his mom.
Okay, I think we have a winner. The red, white, and blue baby.
Romero's red face from all the crying. But it's not over. He's got to race several more times. His extended family takes him to the corner in between heats, and they're fanning and sprinkling him with water, but to no avail. In the finals, a baby named Brady wins the whole shebang by a mile.
Brady.
Hey, Brady, what do you got to say about winning, huh?
Can you say yay? Can you say yay? Uh-oh. Can you say uh-oh?
Instead of using his words, Brady gives my microphone a little wet kiss. It's a fitting farewell to the end of his first and last baby race. For the California Report, I'm Sam Harnett in Pleasanton.
It's all over but the fireworks for this week's California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director is Susie Rancho. Susie, favorite thing to barbecue?
The easiest hot dogs.
Because you don't have to really do anything to them.
You can drink beer while you're making them.
Oh man, totally.
The technical producer is Seal Muller.
I don't barbecue. I live at the beach in the fog.
And we had additional engineering from Danny Bringer. The online team includes David Marks, David Weir, and Olivia Allen Price. Favorite thing to barbecue?
Ooh, corn. Corn is so good on the barbecue with some Old Bay. Mm.
Our interns are Laura Clivens and Natalia Estrada.
Zucchini.
California Report's editorial team includes Victoria Maleon.
Actually, more of a side dish kind of a person. Coleslaw, mac and cheese.
Ingrid Becker. Ingrid, favorite thing to barbecue?
Salmon.
And Holly Kernan.
Peaches.
First person to mention fruit.
I'm fruity.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. I'm with Olivia on this one. Corn on the cob, definitely. Absolutely the best. Thanks for listening. Have a great holiday weekend, everybody.
This is the California Report.
Hot links.
Ribs. You were way too late.
California Foodways is made possible with support from Cal Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Visit www.calhum.org. Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. More at irvine.org. And the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of children at risk in California.